What we had discussed, just a quick chazar on what we saw yesterday, we saw that there is a shita in the Baalei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Chaim, who, the way that it's quoted in the standard version of Tosfos that we have, that the chiyuv yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, or the mitzvah ladur Eretz Yisrael, is contingent upon our capacity to fulfill the mitzvah satzliyos ba'aretz. So, in a time such as the Middle Ages, but it obviously could be at any time where the Jewish people were not able to do these things for whatever reason, economic reasons, political oppression, etc. Reb Chaim, the way that it's quoted in the Baalei HaTosfos, was of the opinion that that the onshin, what he called the onshin, the just in the cost benefit analysis, the cost of being an Eretz Yisrael and not being able to avoid certain Yisurim, and therefore being subject to the Onshin, would override any benefit to Mitzvah L'Dor Eretz Yisrael. So it really does sound like a cost-benefit analysis, though we saw that the Maharit had, I wouldn't call it a conspiratorial theory, but the Maharit found it hard to imagine that Reb Chaim ever said that. So the Maharit interpreted Reb Chaim Cohen in a different light entirely. And he said, no, it wasn't as if he was denying the value of Diras Eretz Yisrael in any historical epoch. All he was saying was that in a situation where there's Sakanas Drachim, one cannot compel their spouse to go to Eretz Yisrael. And again, then the Nafkamina would be, of course, you couldn't, let's say if it was a wife, you couldn't divorce her without paying the Ksuba fee. So in any event, that was a Maharit in terms of how do we interpret the Shita of Reb Chaim Cohen, quoted in the Baalei HaTosfos, but that was, in any event, a far cry from the Ramban. The Ramban had a number of very important points. First of all, he perceives the Chiyuv Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael as a Chovas HaYachid, right? In other words, that it has nothing to do with merely the obligation of the Tzibur to settle the land of Israel, etc., but it's incumbent upon each and every one of us, right? Like any other Chovas HaGavra, Tfilin, or Birkas HaMazon, or Tfilah, according to the Rambam, right? The Chiyuv of Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael is Chayav Kol Yachid Me'imanu, and it applies in every single generation by definition. And the Ramban, in my reading, and I was making a lot of this, has two components. Obviously, one has to rid the land of foreign oppressive elements. In other words, we shouldn't be subject to any foreign sovereignty in the geographical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. But there was a second dimension that I wanted to make much of, and I thought that this could potentially expand the scope of the Kiyum, not the Kiyum in its ideal sense, but at least the Kiyum in its in a partial sense. Again, we're dealing with the Ramban here, so it would be quite ironic for me to say that one could have a Kiyum of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael outside of Eretz Yisrael, because the Ramban himself points out that with respect to any Chiyuv, right, the question is what kind of Kiyum could one have in Chutz La'aretz, let alone a Kiyum of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right, based on that Zifrei we spoke about at great length, Hatzivi Lach Tziyunim. So what was that second dimension in the Ramban, Mark?
The idea of Shmama.
Right, exactly. That development of the land is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Yishuv Ha'aretz, and the Ramban therefore could be read as opening the opportunity for even Yahadut of Chutz La'aretz to participate in some measure in Yishev Eretz Yisrael. I would also mention that I think that Shlichim would also potentially fall under this category, right? In other words, somebody that left Eretz Yisrael for the purposes of strengthening, let's say, take an ambassador. You could say, well, anytime, purely halakhic question, when the ambassador is, living in Taiwan, I'm not really sure, I assume that Israel has an ambassador to Taiwan, I don't know what the status of their relationships with mainland China versus Taiwan are, but, is he not participating in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Well, certainly not in the fullest sense of the term, but what he is doing is protecting the shilton of Eretz Yisrael, in his capacity. So is he participating in Mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? In my opinion, according to the Ramban, partially. So I think that there is a middle area that the Ramban himself develops. Now, what about the Shitas HaRambam? That's what I wanted to discuss today, and then to finish it off with a reflection on the balance between two very important halachic values, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and Kibud Avim. So we already have noted that the Rambam is often misrepresented as not valuing Yishuv Eretz Yisrael Bizman Hazeh because of an omission in the Sefer HaMitzvos. As we've spoken about, that omission in the Sefer HaMitzvos has been interpreted variously. So what are the three approaches that we've seen so far? in the Achronim, just quoting them a number of times already. So what was the approach of the Megillas Esther? The Megillas Esther read the Rambam in light of the... Right, the Gemara in Ksuvos, the Reish Shalo Yalu Vachoma, that the Rambam was explicitly of the opinion, ala Reb Chaim Cohen, that there could be no mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael Bizman Hazeh, but even further, based on a Shavua, that there would be a kind of an Isser involved. In other words, Reb Chaim Cohen did never suggest that there would be an Isser of going. He just would say, you know, there can't be a mitzvah Lador Beretz Yisrael because, you know, let's say you're not going to be able to keep the Onshin. You know, so Reb Chaim Cohen would say, if you go, you go. The Gemara Ksuvos, if taken, you know, if one thinks that this is actually the correct interpretation of the Gemara, at least the correct application of the Gemara, would go much further, and that was the way the Megillas Esther read the Rambam. I thought, as I mentioned already, that that was actually impossibility. We also noted Rav Cook's approach, that the reason that the Rambam doesn't enumerate it amongst the 613 was, Jacob? Right, Mitzvah Kalalas, and then Rav Hankin said, well, that's not true. How could that be? After all, there is a very specific application, namely...
Yeshiva, to live there.
Right. In other words, to go and to cross over into the land of Israel. But what I noted is that it's not guaranteed. After all, one could already be there. In other words, why should one assume that the Rambam's directive was to people all over? It could have been written with the ideal configuration already in mind. So, be that as it may, let's take a look now at the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. This is the 15th source, the Rambam Hilchos Melachim. Okay, who remembers the... This is really the second half of the Perek. What's the first half of the Perek about here in Hilchos Melachim? Perekei? Okay, yeah, go ahead, Victoria.
I don't remember.
Okay. You remember? So the Rambam is a shita. The Rambam is talking about the limitations on monarchical excess. Right? And the Torah, of course, has a triple restriction in which areas, by the way, all of which were violated grossly by Shlomo HaMelech, leading to his downfall. See Melachim Yud Aleph. Yeah.
Too many wives?
Yeah.
Two more horses?
Right.
I always forget the third one. going back to Egypt.
Well, Mark? It's actually the most obvious one.
Money.
Yeah. Okay, so they're all explicitly teleological, meaning the Torah doesn't just say you can't do these things, but the Torah gives a reason in each case, which, by the way, led to Shlomo's downfall. Shlomo said, not me, said I, right? It can't be me. So what's the nature of the restriction against Kesef? V'chesef is ahav lo yarbe lo me'od. What's that?
It's corruptive.
Okay, right. So the implication based on the context of Pesukim, even though this is the most subtle one, is that there's something inherently corrosive about it. What about Nashim?
Well, that's an easy one.
The Vilti Yasur Levavo. And then I guess, right, remember correctly, the safe of that pasuk is Vechas Vizav Lo Yar Belo Ma'od. So, right, those two are part of one construct. Now, the horses is a very interesting.
It's a power. It's associated with the sense of physical power.
Or maybe war.
Well, right. So there's also this debate about what it means. But in just in terms of the pasuk itself, Jacob, you said it before. Just
returning to Egypt.
Right. Lo yar velo susim, velo yashiv et ha'am mitzrayim lema'an harbot sus. Right, because the horse market in the ancient world was in Egypt, and indeed Right, Shlomo does just that. So anyway, the Rambam interpreted the three different places, the first of which begins with at Yom Suf, when Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jewish people, Hashem yilachem lachem v'atem tacharishun, ki asher item et Mitzrayim hayom lo tosifun lerotam od ad olam, that there are three places in the Torah where the Torah speaks about, again, one in Parshas Shalach, one in Parshas Shoftim in the context of Melech, and one other place, right, that there are actually three places in the Torah where the Torah explicitly restricts return to the land of Egypt. So that's where this, that's the trajectory of this, this parak. So the Rambam starts talking about the Isser of ever living in Mitzrayim. One is permitted to go there for business trips and the like. Of course, the irony is that the Rambam lived there, and that's why he signed his letters, Over b'shalosh averos b'chol yom.
But going back, aren't there interpretations that say that what's really being referred to in that context is that Egypt is the representation of excess in materialism, excess in military, and excess in inappropriate passion. And that's...
I think that there's great evidence for that. Not even interpretation, but...
Also for military.
But Victoria?
Right.
What's the best... What's the best makor?
In terms of...
Does buttress Mark's point? Who can bring a raya for Mark? The Lachdos here?
This
week, Sedra. Right? Kemas Eretz Mitzrayim.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. In other words, it's not even interpretation, Mark. It's Beferish Pesukim that say exactly what you're saying. Right? So, just in the context of this specific application, Velo Yashira Mitzrayim Alaman Harbotsus. Right, so
that would be more spiritual, meaning in terms of like the Torah, but that there's like a spiritual going to Egypt, and then
yeah. But Mark's reading is totally plausible. In other words, the Torah gave a specific application, but I think we should be very open to Mark's interpretation based on the Pesukim this week, etc. Right, Mas Eretz Yisrael, Mas Eretz Canaan, Asher Yishavtem, right, Balos Asun, and you know what's Chazal's inimitable expression about Egypt? This is a good one to have. Shkura Beficha. What do they always say? Mitzrim shtufin bezima. Right? In other words, that the land was awash in fornication. It's an amazingly graphic image. The idea of Egypt is literally what I like to call the barometric pressure of Giloy Arayos was unbearable, right? That's really what Chazal are trying to say about Eretz Mitzrayim. You know, Shlomo got involved in all of these things. And of course, what's the irony of how everything happened to Shlomo? Shlomo's downfall started with one person. And it's the opposite of the story of Paro and Moshe Rabbeinu. Paro was undermined by whom? Bas Paro, who took in Moshe Rabbeinu. Shlomo HaMelech was undermined by Bas Paro, right, in the other direction. And then, of course, who was Shlomo? It says, Vayakem Hashem Satan l'Shlomo. And Malachim Perek Yud Aleph, who's seen it recently? So Victoria, who was the enemy that Hashem put into the house of Paro to be Shlomo's enemy? Dov? So Hadad ben Adad, right, who was somebody that when Jewish people were going to war against Ammon, or against Edom, excuse me, and the Jewish people had literally wiped out every male in Edom, so the lone survivor, a very small group of survivors, was this scion of the royal line, Hadad ben Adad, and he sought refuge in the house of Paro. It was a Midah Kineged Midah, and from there, he was able to serve as a thorn in Shlomo's side. There are other ones as well, but Paro is always at the heart of it. So the whole story of Shlomo is, you know, going back to Egypt and being undermined by it. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us Shlomo quite arrogantly said, oh, well, this is why. The Gemara asked the question, why didn't the Torah give the reasons by the side of the mitzvah? So the Gemara assumes that there are reasons. This is because when the Torah did it, it didn't end up too well. It's obviously, you know, the Gemara has to be explored theologically. What does it mean? Obviously, Hashem had the omniscience. But Shlomo, and he said the smartest person in the world, Shlomo, just assumed that he would be, through the force of his personality, able to overcome these things. And Shlomo, anybody remember what the divine limit is in terms of wives? David HaMelech went exactly up to the limit. 18. 18. You can have up to, you can have 18. You can have 18. How many did Shlomo... Right. Well, I'm just saying wives. Wives. So how many did Shlomo go over by?
A lot.
Right.
He had 1,000.
Right. So a mere 982. Uh-huh. So Shlomo was doing 1,000 in an 18 zone, which I think is, you know,
that's
triple the fine.
That's definitely
yeah. So the... This is the context of the Rambam. Okay, let's now take a look at the second half of Parakeh and Hilchos Malachim. Okay, Dr. Knarek, you want to read for us? Yeah, this is the 15th Makor.
Yeah.
So why is Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael and Hilchos Malachim?
Well, I was just explaining, because the Rambam is talking about the places that you can't live or that you can't go. So the Rambam talks about, so you just, the immediate predecessor is living in Egypt. The Rambam says you cannot live there, but you could go there for a business trip.
But isn't it worse
because kings can't go back?
Right. In other words, the whole story, that's what I was just trying to say, that the story of kingly restriction on horses is Laman Yashiv Esam Mitzrayma. So then the Rambam starts talking about the Isser of living in Egypt. Then he starts talking about, well, where can one live? Now that I've restricted Egypt, you know, what about Woodmere, says the Rambam?
Florida.
Right.
Oh, I thought it was because
well, that obviously, you know, can't take a stand against that. Yeah. Okay, Dr. Knerek, you want to read for us the Rambam? Okay, so what category is Rambam dealing with here, first and foremost?
Said you can only leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah or to find a wife or for protection in
a right, and it's pikuach nefesh, right? But the simple right, the third category is really pikuach nefesh and
right, do business.
You can leave on a business trip. But what here is Rambam talking about? Just the let's be very, very precise in our terms. He's not talking about X, he's talking about Y, whether X and Y. Ariel?
Literally leaving, not settling across, but can you leave?
Victoria, outstanding. Right, the Rambam is not talking about taking up residence outside the land of Israel. All the Rambam is referring to here is right, is can you ever leave? So based on right, the pashtus of the Rambam, can one leave for vacation?
No. Someone just told me recently that that their daughter's school, they've made Aliyah, and that they take a trip to Poland in 12th grade, and a lot of the girls actually didn't go because their parents felt like they weren't supposed to leave Israel, like even on a trip.
Okay, so I mean, it's very well established. I would actually include that under one of these categories, but that they didn't ask my opinion, nor would they. So the point of the matter is that the Rambam doesn't allow for recreational leaving Israel. Period. Okay, so now what about the other topic? What about, as Victoria correctly pointed out, right, residence?
Want me to read?
Yeah, sure. Dr. Knerek, you're taking the whole Rambam today.
Okay.
We'll just finish the paragraph, then we'll summarize.
So
substantively, how many heterim does the Rambam have to take up residence in Chutz Laaretz with every place with the exception of Mitzrayim? Substantively. How many heterim are there? Again, he had 4 heterim to leave on a temporary basis, right? Talmud Torah, Lisa Isha, Pikuach Nefesh, business trip. But substantively, how many of the heterim does he have in terms of taking up permanent residence?
One.
Right, namely, right, dire economic straits. Right? So what he's saying is that, you know, to take up permanent residence in Chutz Laaretz, one has to, right, the economic conditions deteriorate to the point where the markets are now, there's what percent inflation?
100%.
Right. In other words, shaved dinar, shnei dinarim, or that, you know, it's not so much that the markets have failed, but
food.
Right, that you've, right, that in other words, that you are in, you know, economically dire straits. This Rambam should be understood in which context? Right. Why doesn't the Rambam just say, well, in that case, you should just rely on the second case, meaning where the problem isn't so much in the systematic economic failure, but in your personal economic catastrophe? Why didn't the Rambam simply say, what would the alternative have been? Stay in Israel and
stop.
Well, he does actually say that, but and rely on or tzedakah.
Well, that's why I say, because right, that was the problem with Avraham Avinu.
According to the Ramban, but right, that, which is not an obvious thing at all. The Gemara in Darim seems to say the opposite. But right, the Rambam could have said, "That's what tzedakah is for." In other words, a person who's trying his best, but But the Rambam tells us many times, Luchos Matanos Anim. This is the Rambam Shlita, so you just have to appreciate the context of the Rambam. What does Rambam say there?
Oh, sorry. No, I know in Shabbat he says that you should rather make a Shabbat like a weekday than...
Right. Well, right. That's based on the Gemara, right? Asei Shabbat Chachol Ve'al Titzarech Lebriyo. So the Rambam took that much further than anybody else, where the Rambam has all these categories of Midas Chasidus, where a person, even if they have every right to take Tzedakah, but, you know, they should always... So the Rambam here is making a concession in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right, for the sake of a Chumrah in, you know, not relying, this is a consistent theme in the Rambam. What's the other very famous place the Rambam says one should never allow oneself to rely on funds for the community? Again, a Chiddush. You have to put these three Rambams together to appreciate it.
Learning.
Beautifully done, Mark. In other words, the Rambam says it's Asur, based on Re'eli Mati Etchem Chukim U'Shvatim Kasher Tzivani Hashem Elokai, that Moshe says, look, I have taught you Chukim U'Shvatim just as God commanded me. The statement of Chazal is Kasher Tzivani Hashem Elokai Ma'ani Bechinam Afatem Bechinam. Just as God did not, as best as we know, take any honorarium, as the term goes, for teaching Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I also didn't take any honorarium. The point is that the Chazal establish some kind of a basis for Talmud Torah Bechinam. So the Rambam paskin this lehalacha. And he actually excoriated people who, you know, he says, Zemechalas Hashem, Mivaz Nesatar. The Rambam would have been utterly appalled by the level of Kolel society that permeated, again, Lohaya Velo Nivra before, but that goes on today. But again, these are all unique Shitos HaRambam. But the Rambam again goes further. I should have been more clear. Not just the Kolel society or person's taking money to learn, but even taking money to teach.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, having a job. Mm-hmm. So the community has roundly rejected, the historical Jewish community has roundly rejected these Rambams, but the Rambams all need to be understood in their panoramic context. Okay.
That's true for a doctor also. Technically, you're not allowed to take money for...
That's...
Because of Harapo Yerapa and Yerapa Mitzvah.
That's it, exactly right. Now, as you know, the literature, that's a very important point. The literature about taking schar for refuah actually is quite parallel to the literature for schar, the Talmud Torah. All the things that you would expect. Schar batal...
I'm surprised in this group, no one's saying, and Obama's living up to that obligation and requirement. I just was waiting for someone to say that.
Right, but he's just very slowly, but that's exactly what is happening. No doubt about it. Well done. You beat us to the punch. Okay. So, then what's the Rambam's proof for the Midas Chasidus here? The Rambam brings a Raya. Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Right, so that's, in Yanei Diyoma, so the Rambam says, and that again is consistent with what Dr. Kinnerik already mentioned, the Ramban in the context of Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz Vayir Avram Mitzrayim Elagor Sham Ki Chaved Ha'Ra'av Ba'aretz is Avram's decision to go down to Egypt of all places in the context of the Ra'av. For the Ramban, this was almost an unforgivable mistake. According to the Ramban, this is such a grave mistake that...
That's why we were in Galus before.
That's why, right, it's an amazing thing. Which is an astounding thing, right? That the Ramban actually says that, but he does.
Well, but he gives a few reasons for that. He also talks about sending Hagar away as a reason for...
That's true. And the Ramban in the various places doesn't cross-reference. But it's an amazing comment. So Ramban took this very, very seriously. Again, sharpen the issue that I'm pointing out here. For the Rambam, it's a Midas Chasidus, but what makes it even more than a Midas Chasidus? Normally you would think that, right, a person choosing not to live up to the Midas Chasidus is, okay, maybe a spiritual concession, but what internally in the Rambam points out, it's not so much a normal Midas Chasidus. Nischaivu Kliya Lamakom. Normally we don't talk about Chiyuv Kliya, right, the ultimate punishment for something which is a normal Midas Chasidus. So I always point out in this context of this Rambam, it's not a Midas Chasidus in the classical sense of the term. You don't have Midas, you'd say, it's a Midas Chasidus to be amongst the first 10 people who show up in Shul, Asar Rishonim. Right. We don't execute somebody who comes number 11.
I thought the idea was that because they were the quote-unquote princes of Israel at the time, they were held to a higher standard. And by not exercising that Midah of Chasidus.
Well, I mean, look at their names. I mean, Nachman and Chaya, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, the idea
had it coming to them when they were born.
Why does the Rambam use Machlam Chayim rather than their father, rather than right?
Yeah, that's a good
Melech,
yeah, that's a good question. It's all based on Chazal, but that's a fair question. I'm not rightly certain. I think that's a good question. Okay. So, all right. So let's just go a little bit further. The Rambam has already set up, right, an outright iser of living anywhere outside of Israel, and even leaving Israel on a temporary basis, with the exception of certain cases. So let's just go a little bit further and finish up the...
ומתגדלים על אפרה, וכן הוא אומר, כי רוצו עבדך את אבנהו ואת אפרה הלכוננו. אמר חכם עם כל השכן בארץ ישראל, אבנהותיו מחולן, שנאמר, וכל עובד יאמר, שכן חיליתי לרם היושב בא נושא הבא.
אוקיי, יא, אפילו הלך בא?
אפילו הלך בא, אבא עמוד, זוכר לחי עולם הבא, וואו. בכל הקורא בו נזכפר לו וכאילו המקום שהוא בו מזבח כפרה שנאמר וכיפר עד מתו עמוק ובפורניות הוא אומר על אדמות מאה תמות והנה דומה כולתו
Let me just explain that, because that's a hard line. Ein adoma kolato mechaim lekolato acharmoso is a line from the Gemara Ksuvos that you could say, well, what's the value of living in Israel if I could just get buried there? You know, the old, you know, but very deep joke, right? I don't want to live in Israel. I just want to be, you know, Israel's good enough for me to die, but not to live. The Gemara Ksuvos actually addresses that issue and says, Ein adoma kolato mechaim, if Israel sort of took you in, to absorbed you while you were still alive, right, respirating, it's better, it works better. The kapara process works a whole lot better than when it absorbs you, you know, post-mortem.
Sayul Mad Miyakov Abinu, Yosef Hatzadik Liolam, Yadur Adamer Tisrael, Afilu Beir Sheruba Akum, Vayadu Bechutzalaretz, Vayafilu Beir Sheruba Yisrael. Shekola Yotze Lechutzalaretz, Keilu Oved Avodazara. Shnena Tigershuni Ayom, Meitapech, Abunachat Hashem Lemor, Lech Avod Elohim Acherim, Uponanio to Omer, Vialad Mat Yisrael Lo Yavo. כשם שעשו לצאת מהארץ לחוץ על הארץ, כן עשו לצאת מבבל לשאור הארצות. שנאמר,
Avela yuvao v'shama yihiyu. Now, with respect to this point in the Rambam, shekola yotze l'chutzaretz kiilu oved avodazara. What's the very important diuk that we need to be making there in the Rambam? Again, this is we saw that before. Where did we see that? That's the Gemara Ksuvos. But Victoria, what diuk do we need to be making in the Rambam? Right. This isn't just what nuance is there here relative to Gemara Ksuvos, which is really the Rambam Lashita. So you guys can go. You can go back. There's no problem looking. If you just go back, right, the first thing that we saw was that Gemara Ksuvos, right, first page. What did the Gemara Ksuvos say?
There it says it's a chayachiyov to live, right, to live there. This is about leaving.
Right, so just going to tie it into the Rambam Lashita. So there, just the quote is, Kol hadar bechutz laretz kilu oved avodes kol chavim.
And here it's.
And how's it the Rambam Lashitaso? The Gemara only objected to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what does the Rambam object to?
Any law, any leaving.
Leaving.
Right. That's presumably without an exception, without a pass.
Right. Well, clearly, right. Right. But that's the amazing chiddush the Rambam.
Where does that come from?
The force of the Rambam's logical mind, right? The Rambam, when the Rambam wanted to bring one source, the source that he brought was Machlon and Chilion, right? What's that?
Meaning the sources in Ketubot don't seem to be as strict.
No, right? The Rambam is a Mechadish here. There's no question about it. It's based on the Chazal, but the Rambam, in his Psak Halacha, goes further than anybody else, including the Ramban. So that's what I said. There are a number of points that to be made here. With the Rambam, it's simply, again, let's just, I mean, I mentioned it yesterday outside, but you see how the Megillas Esther is, I think, literally impossible to reconcile with the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah. The idea that somehow that the Rambam limited himself to a particular historical epoch sounds, right? If that were true, the Rambam wouldn't have had all these explicit heterim. You wouldn't need these heterim for, you know, Pikuach Nefesh and the Hatzil Mina Akum. You wouldn't be there in the first place. Right? Number two, right, the Rambam doesn't, right, it's a pretty big, massive exception. If the Rambam's listing, you know, precisely, under which circumstances can you leave? Under which circumstances can you leave to take up residence somewhere else? If none of this applies, right, the Rambam ought to have said it. It's clear that not only does the Rambam have a requirement to live in Israel, but an Isser to be outside of Israel. Yeah.
I understand the Rambam's last statement that I read it. Kashem she'asur chatzeis be'eretz, chutzar is kach, asur chatzeis be'bavel?
Yeah, the Rambam, that's just based on there's a straight Gemara in Ksuvos that quotes the pasuk here of Bavel yuva'u v'shamayu, the Navi of Yirmiyahu, so the Nivu of Yirmiyahu Navi, where the Jewish people are told, Bavel yuva'u, right after Chorban Bayis Rishon, v'shamayu b'nu l'chabatim. Exactly. So, in other words, which Amora interpreted that to mean... Right, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda, the Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda said, oh, that means even us. And Zera obviously didn't interpret it that way. He said, no. He says, Bavel Yuval Vishama Yiyu means that you're not supposed to go anywhere else, but
only
of course...
for that specific time, not, I mean, not...
Either limited to time, or the Rambam isn't limited to time. The Rambam limits it to a particular geography. The Rambam didn't say only in that generation. The Rambam said that you can't go from Bavel elsewhere, but of course, the Nevuah was never supposed to say you're not supposed to come back to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, what about Ezra and Nehemiah?
Exactly, the Rambam... Exactly, right. That was presumably what Reb Zera had in mind the whole time. So, let me just make one further point in the Rambam. I think the Rambam's position is quite clear, where it speaks to itself. But in terms of the heterim of the Rambam, this is just the one hayara that I'd like to add, my own. The heterim of the Rambam. The Rambam gave us four heterim of leaving Eretz Yisrael on a temporary basis. And I think that they all have, basically, it's really just one heter. And it has to do with, I think, what we said before about, you know, last week, about what the benefit of Eretz Yisrael is and the one mitzvah that it really can be compared to. In other words, what's the common denominator between the four sources of heter to leave on a temporary basis? And how does that relate to the nature of the kiyum of Eretz Yisrael? So what I'm arguing is that there's a perfectly discernible logic here, both in terms of what you gain from Eretz Yisrael and the cases, therefore, in which you're permitted to leave.
So
a
question,
because
of Bechaibahem, I think, in other words, each one of these things, in the absence of these things, it's impossible to move forward in terms of your kiyum mitzvah.
Exactly right. In other words, if we relate to the basic idea of living in Eretz Yisrael as valuable in and of itself, but like Talmud Torah, which the Rambam calls Ikar HaGadol Shekol Teloibo, incredibly impressive because of its potentiating effect, and it has this massive spillover effect on one's entire Avodas Hashem, so then by definition, there are always going to be Heterim built into that system. Namely, when living there is going to undermine the very purpose of being there. So if living there is going to undermine your very existence itself, right, or... Right, that's what I talk about, the Pikuach Nefesh, or Jewish continuity, right, or your capacity to learn Torah, right, to all of these cases, right, or to survive, right, you could look at, right, Tzchora as a kind of diluted Pikuach Nefesh, you don't make any money in Kamach in Torah, right, it's all just one heter, because you don't want living in Israel to undermine the value of living in Israel, that's really the point. So it's not like a random list of heterim that, oh, all of these things independently are strong enough to overcome Eretz Yisrael, but the very idea of Eretz Yisrael is that you should be there for the sake of potentiating and expanding your Avodas Hashem, and at a point where that becomes literally unsustainable for a variety of different reasons, then one can leave. And then the next thing which emerges is exactly what the Rambam says, and of course you have to go back. Because again, it wasn't that living in Israel was overruled by these things, but that living in Israel itself, in a way, demanded these things. And therefore, of course, once you've achieved them, you go back. So I think in certain ways, in certain respects, the Rambam's position is in fact the most ambitious one, even more so than the Ramban. Again, the Ramban, you know, had particular language that we cherish very much, but the Rambam's restrictions, the Rambam's Isurim, to my knowledge, go further than anybody else's on the topic, which I think is very interesting. Yeah.
I just think the way that they're formulating this is different. According to for the Rambam, it's more once you're there, then you can't leave. But he doesn't have this focus on actually getting there. Like, the second paragraph, like, the end of it, he brings all the stuff in Ketubot about how important it is to live there, but it seems the focus is, like, it's assumed that you're going to be there, and then once you're there, you can't leave. But the Ramban and the others are more focused on, no, you must go there and live there and settle there. So it doesn't seem to be the same push in the Rambam.
Well, but that was...
If I'm living somewhere else, I need to pick up and move there. But once I've already settled there,
I'm just saying, but that was Rav Kook's whole point. The Rav Kook said, well, of course the Rambam wouldn't have focused on the affirmative dimensions.
Why, of course?
Because that's what he calls the mitzvah hakolelas. That there's so... It's not a specific mitzvah to be there.
I mean, there's a lot of mitzvah hakolelas. I mean...
The Rambam categorically says I don't count mitzvos hakololos.
But I'm not talking about it in the list, I'm talking about it in the discussion. This is a very long discussion. Like, you only even brought part of it. It's a very long discussion, and in the whole discussion...
Well, no, but I'm saying, we looked at every source relating to Eretz Yisrael.
But I'm saying, in that whole parak, of parak hay, it doesn't focus on the first step is going there. So is that assumed? Like, I feel like Rambam doesn't usually make a lot of assumptions.
Well, he does say that a lot of people think that by just going there and be buried... it's good enough, but he was saying that it's better to be going there when you're alive.
Yeah, I mean, I would think the whole... I think Victoria raises a good point, and that's why the Rambam was open to interpretation, but it seems to me that much
it
like...
It seems like it's missing a step. Like, there's something missing in his formulation, which is unusual for the Rambam. So it's trying to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah, it's hard to do the... It's hard to get into what I consider to be more of a speculative realm, but I think when you put it all together, it's, you know, the omission in the Sefer Mitzvos, you know, being what it is. I think that if I had to choose of all the possible explanations, I think Rav Kook makes the most sense in terms of putting the Mishnah Torah and the Sefer Mitzvos together. I think the Megillah Esther is literally impossible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
No, but it is hard. I mean, right? The Rambam doesn't make it easy to say that it's obvious that he holds it to mitzvah, right? Cause, I mean, he says it's all like nice stuff. Like if you're there, it's kapara. It's like a mizbeah kapara. Like that doesn't sound like it's a chiyuv to do. It sounds like I don't know, call it midechasidus or whatever. You know, but it's he could be explicit. It would be very helpful.
He doesn't say anything. He's just kind of citing, basically, like. With ellipses,
right?
Like,
even if you walk,
I think the brunt of the intellectual work that has to be done, let's say Victoria, for your position or the position that you're pointing out is that why would there be such strong isurim, right? The gap.
It just there seems to be
that's
well because there it's almost like a bizui, right? It's one thing if you're not there, right? But if you're there already and you leave, then you can. You can see the logic of that. I mean,
it's hard for me to see the logic of that, really, because living there, not living there, is an active choice.
No, it's. I mean, think of what would be involved if you were born in, you know, Spain or wherever, right? It's a life changing. You know, I mean, it's hard for people, you know, to make Aliyah from America, and it's just getting on a plane, right? This would be, you know, a voyage.
Well, but to a certain extent, that's a cultural and sociological phenomenon. I don't know if that would meet the Rambam's threshold, but it seems to me that it puts in, if one assumes not like Rav Kook's reading of the Rambam, then it puts an enormous amount of pressure on what Dov is calling the bizui aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's a lot. You have to explain why is it that you don't have to go, but if you're there you can't leave.
In this incredibly restrictive way, at the risk of one's own life.
Right.
In other words, if the Rambam is sensitive, that's what strikes me as almost untenable. In other words, if the Rambam is so sensitive to the difficulties people have in getting there, right, you would expect the Rambam to be much more sensitive to the difficulties people have in staying there. And yet the Rambam says, right, mm-hmm. that one is really never allowed to leave. So the idea that, okay, once you're there, you know, you're sort of in the Venus flytrap and you're never, it's a little strange. So I prefer to say, again, the approach is not my original. Yeah. To me, again, I would rather bend a little bit, if I could use the term, bend the Sefer HaMitzvahs to the Mishnah Torah than the other way around. But you know, like that's why I tried to present all the possibilities, because it's one of those great open questions. It just seems to me that the Rambam's value of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, whether or not, you know, however one understands the Sefer HaMitzvahs, is that itself is crystal clear based on Hilchos Melachim.
The only thing that really made sense to me, when you start to think about, well, what does it mean if I say that it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, and also the way the Ramban is formulating it and the idea behind it that you can't live anywhere else, basically, if you put it in your list of mitzvot and you put it in the Mishnah Torah, then you're making anybody that lives outside of Israel, including yourself, like basically, right, you're committing a sin every day. And I feel like I think that's the way that Rav Moshe spoke about it, but of course, like, we wouldn't look at it in that way. Like, on the one hand, it could be a mitzvah to live there, but you can make the logical step, and then you're not allowed to live anywhere else, and then we're all in trouble. Mm-hmm. And the Rambam wouldn't want to say that.
I don't know. I think that almost gets into an inherently speculative realm, but, it's, you know, could be. I just don't know. You know, all we have is the text, and you know, beyond that I don't know. Yeah, Jacob.
Rambam doesn't say anywhere. I mean, he wouldn't agree with the Ramban about the fact that mitzvahs outside of Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, are kind of a little bit more contingent than they are in Israel.
Right. Rambam does not quote that. Rashi and Ramban do. The Rambam doesn't quote that. I don't think the Rambam felt that Eretz Yisrael impacted the Chi of Hagavra. I do not think that he thought that impacted the Chi of Hagavra.
The exceptions Rambam puts in the beginning,
yeah,
you know, it's not counting economic, but the other list of exceptions. Mm-hmm. Are they meant to be, the first two meant to be, you know, only in cases as severe as, you know, Hatzil Min Akum? Right, like finding a wife. Does it mean like you're supposed to go, you can leave Israel if there are better wives in another country, or kind of like if there are none in Israel? And
that's
the same thing
question.
With Talmud Torah. Because Hitzel Min Aklum seems like it's a pretty, you know, it's a dire straits issue. It's a, you know, kind of binary. Either they're going to kill you or they're not.
Right.
Right. Whereas Talmud Torah and, you know, finding a wife,
I don't know.
Don't need to be.
I don't know. I don't know that we can know, because the Rambam doesn't qualify it. I think we can make a reasonable argument in either direction. Let me just say that the way that I interpreted the what I call the heterim at least opens up the door for a more liberal reading of those, because what I'm arguing, the real key of Eretz Yisrael is that it potentiates a much higher level of spirituality by allowing one to fill many more mitzvahs, being in the context of Hashem. So therefore one can say, well, if I'm going to find something that's better in the context of, let's say, a wife who's better able to communicate the Masoretic values that I'm interested in, or a Rebbe who's better, right? So it's not just the utter absence of these things, but it's that these things... So I think that I've opened it up to that. Now, of course, it's always drawing a line, right? Because, you know, how much better? And
the Rambam draws that line to a degree. He says, I feel we're here, Shirubakum.
Yeah. That's true. In other words, but that again doesn't relate to the two immediate questions of Talmud Torah and Lisa Isha. I think it's a fascinating question. You know, to what extent? And again, it's hard to maybe with Talmud Torah you could quantify it a little bit in terms of, you know, ranking various gedolim. Maybe at least with respect to marriage, it's a little harder to quantify. You know, how much better are the quality? You know, you'd have to, you know, what are the criterion? You know, it's you know,
you probably rank it on probability of finding anyone.
Right.
So, probably the way you would do it.
Right. Exactly. That's true. Okay. So the last piece that I just wanted to do was
with
to
all of this. How does he resolve his staying in...
I'm not sure. How does he... But then you could ask the same question. I'm less bothered by that because the Rambam himself wrote, you know, Over Shalosh Averis B'chol Yom. Is that I'm not perfect?
So, I mean, you're allowed to Over...
No, he's saying you're not. That's why he signed it. I am Over Yisurei D'Oraisa every day.
Talmud Torah.
What's that?
Talmud Torah.
No, but the Rambam doesn't have a Heter Talmud Torah to be in Egypt.
Yes, he could have been in Eretz.
So the Rambam... I don't know.
He didn't have to say anything.
But that's always, but that's always a question that you can ask. You know, the author of the Mesilas Yesharim. You read the, anybody here ever read the Mesilas Yesharim at any point in their life?
Read a little bit.
Okay, So the Mesis Sharim is all about how, you know, the whole, every second of the day one has to be completely and utterly involved in the avoidance of chet. The Ramchal wrote dramas. He was an Italian dramatist. I mean, that wasn't the only thing he did. Obviously, he's a massive Talmud Chacham, but, you know, the biographical, they're always going to be, you know, just by nature of humanity, even amongst, you know, the greatest Talmidei Chachamim. I'm just bringing that as an extreme example of, you know, their biographical data. I'll just give you my point of view. You take it or leave it. But as a methodological, I have a very strong methodological conviction that biographical data probably shouldn't enter into evaluation of particular texts in terms of, you know, how seriously did the Rambam mean his Isser of living in Egypt? I think pretty seriously. Okay, and he said, I'm over Shalosh Averis B'Cholyom. Now, why did he not, you know, do something about it? I don't know. I can't know, but, you know, but I think that we should, you know, read these things at face value. It's sometimes helpful to be aware of the context, but, you know, I think that methodologically we're on much, you know, we're on terra firma when we're dealing with the text and the lines of argument as opposed to, you know, integrating too much biographical data. Yeah.
Also, Israel probably at the time was in a state of total desolation. So, you know, according to his own criteria,
maybe. I don't know. It's possible, you know. It's for me, it's very, I'm very leery of, you know, structurally I'm very leery of all the, of these kinds of questions. If a person shows me a primary text and says the Rambam himself wrote in the Tshuva, that's something else for me. You know, personal opinion. Okay, so the last thing that I wanted to discuss was just the interrelationship between Kibbutz Ava'im and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So what's the locus classicus? And this is one makor that we have in Chazal, quoted by Rashi, the most famous application of this question.
About Shabbos and Kibbutz Ava'im, at a certain point when your parents ask you to violate a mitzvah that you're not supposed to.
Well, the Mabit introduced that into the discussion. But simple Rashi al Torah first. Jacob is like four steps ahead. Shkoach. I'll just read the Pesukim Lechacha, and you quote the Rashi here, and this is just the point that I wanted to conclude with. So the Torah says the following: Vayichiterach 70 shana vayolad at Avraham Nachor v'yad Haran. The 18th and 19th. So it's the last thing we'll do. Just these sources 18, 19, 20. Right, Terach lived for 70 years, and he had Avram, Nachor, and Haran. Vayikach Terach Avram Beno v'lot Ben Haran Ben Beno. Right, Vet Sarai Kalatosh Eishet Avram Beno. It should be Vayetzu Tam Biorkasim Lechal Arz Knan Vayvod Haran Vayishu Sham. Now what Terach was going to do, why he was going to Eretz Canaan is a big mystery, but he came to Haran, which is on the border between, right, Turkey and Syria, right, so, and they, whatever, they stopped there. Vayu yimei Terach chameshanim atayim shana, vayam Terach v'Haran. So Terach lived 205 years, and Terach died in Haran. Vayil Haran kashod yirei la v'adunoi, vayil chitolod v'aram bin chameshanim v'shim shana, b'tzeito mei Haran. So if you do the math, how old was Terach when Avram left from Haran to go to Israel? Again, he was 70 when he had Avram, and Avram was 75 when Avram himself left from Haran to go to the land of Israel. So Terach, right, was 145. So he still had literally 60 years of his life. But if you're not like reading actively, what would you think have happened? That Avram left for Eretz Yisrael when, just to read the simple Pesukim, read, Vayu yimei Terach chameshanim atayim shana vayam Terach v'Haran. Vayilech Avram, right, that Avram, you know, buried his father and then moved. So Rashi says, Lama hiktim akasim itasar Terach yisashal shal Avram. Why did the Torah, right, clearly, right, set up a reading that would lead us, I mean, if you take a moment to do the math, you realize that it's not true, right, but Shalo yeyadavim mefursim lakol v'yomru lo kiyam Avram eskibat aviv sheni chuzakein v'halach lo. So what's the whole point? That Chas v'Shalom, nobody should draw the conclusion that Avram Avinu was lax. Right, which can be interpreted in one of two ways. Minimally, what it could be saying is that nobody should ever think that the Jewish project was born of a kind of an ethical compromise. Spiritual ethical compromise. I'm very taken with that reading. words, that you shouldn't think that the very project at its moment of inception was born with any kind of abidyeved, even with respect to one's own father. The second reading is that they're saying something much more particular, that generally speaking, you know, Avram was a unique case because it was based on the Dibor, but that generally speaking, if there's ever a conflict between, you know, being involved in the care of parents, let's say Kibbutz Av, and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that generally speaking, that Kibbutz Av will trump Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but that,
I mean, that's what I mean.
Right, that Avram is the exception to that rule. To be honest with you, I actually put a lot of weight on both readings. I think that it's very important that the Jewish project should not have been born in, that the Torah was very invested in the Jewish project never being born out of a repudiation of ethical values. In other words, the particular Avram's mission is a moment of double particularization. In other words, the world as such, before this point, was God obviously wanted a relationship with people, but I think in a universal sense, right? There was no chosen land and there was no chosen people. This is the moment where God is doing the moment, it's a moment of double selection, Eretz Yisrael and B'nai Yisrael from the very beginning. And I think it's very important that that be built on the foundation of universal ethical obligation, and I think that's what this Rashi is ultimately about, is that don't think for a moment that the Jewish standard was a repudiation of general values like taking care of one's parents. I mean, this is the halacha always says, Mi'ika midi, right, Dili Yisrael Shari Ule'ovde Kochavim Aser, is that the whole idea of 613 Taryag is built off Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach, that generally speaking, there can be no areas where we have Heterim where they have Chumras. Now, there are certain exceptions to that rule, but that rhetorical question in Chazal, Mi'ika Midi, is built off this idea that it has to be a more spiritually demanding enterprise. So the idea that somehow the particularization of spiritual life came at the expense of certain universal values is, I think, a very, very important point that this Rashi is raising. But the second point, I think, is also really interesting and incredibly practical. What happens if a person is involved in the care of aging, elderly parents? And I don't just mean the physical medical care, but, you know, let's say picking up is going to be a massive emotional blow on two levels, with respect to children and often with respect to grandchildren. And the quality of life, in many cases, of parents, you know, and then grandparents, either potential grandparents or actual grandparents at this stage, will be substantively diminished. It's an interesting question, which I think is raised by this. So I just want to give you a countervailing perspective from the Mabit. I think this is so extreme that it's just good to know whatever one makes of it. I mean, it's the first time I saw this tshuva, I was astounded. So we'll conclude with this source. But if anything, I think this highlights Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in a very particular way and serves as a good culmination for our four shiurim. Milam Deinu Rabbeinu Reuven, Shenadash Mbilach Chakach Chakach Shidur B'Tzvat. Anybody know what that Rashi Tevo says? That Reuven said if certain things transpire, that he would take up residence in Tzvat. What's that the abbreviation? Tibana V'Tzikonim V'Mheira V'Yameinu. Parents don't want to let him go. Okay, the wife is, but that we've already dealt with. Okay, whatever the question relates to the wife and the parents. And then just the wife for now. Look at the parents. Tshuva. Chayiv l'kayim nidro v'inu chayiv l'achosh tzavas avi v'imo sh'amr lo sh'lo yeilech chidi alfinu perakam v'yifamos amr lo avi v'imo itame o al tachzir lo yish l'chsiv ish imo v'aviv tira'u shabsosai tishmaru kuch chmeyevim b'kvodi k'dechsev v'sev v'dekra ani Hashem achanami hu v'avi chayiv n'dor b'aretz Yisrael v'ein lo onesh sh'shenu v'kayim mitzvah kibbutz av v'aim sh'gam heim yichon l'alos imo yizkayim b'beiz mitzvah shivas yisrael kibbutz av v'aim. It's an amazing idea, quoting from this week's parasha. Ish imo v'aviv tira'u v'shabtotai tishmaru, right, that the limits of kibbutz av v'aim are always when it comes up against other norms. So the application is astounding, right? The Mabit is saying is that, look, parents can scream from today until tomorrow, but kibud avim doesn't factor in discussion. Matter of fact, they're the ones who are preventing the mekayim kibud avim because they should go too. Just like ani va'aviv chayavim bechvot, you know, say father, both you and I are obligated to observe the Shabbos. So my not listening to you to violate the Shabbos isn't like I'm choosing Shabbos over kibud av. On the contrary, kibud av doesn't enter into the discussion because there's no kibud av where you're doing something that you're in violation. So the extreme formulations here of the Mabit, right, I think, right, lay out a very, very extreme position, one that I think is not, to my mind anyway, consistent with the general sentiment of Rashi in Parashas Noach, but in any event, I think, should at least be thought-provoking with respect to the limits of, are there any limits to the affirmative mitzvah of Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael? Now, notably, the Rambam didn't speak about kibud av v'eim as one of the potential heterim for either leaving Eretz Yisrael or taking up residence outside of Eretz Yisrael. Interestingly, you know, if you ask me, to me, this represents the single best reason to be outside of Israel. Something that I can understand much, much, much better than you could say. Well, you know, I had a very close, still very close, my Rebbe for 4 years in high school. For years, didn't want to make aliyahs. His mother wasn't. Eventually, moved his mother along with him, and it turned out that she's had the best quality of life that he's. You tell me, you know, she's had in 40 years. That apparently it's much better for her over there for various reasons. But something that is actually very, very significant in terms of a spiritual value, to my mind, and you know, all the things people talk about, you know, all the other, so to speak, heterim are available there. I mean, there's an enormous amount of Talmud Torah. Thank God there are people to meet. You know, people say, oh, you do Kiruv here, that's important, but you could do a lot of Kiruv over there too. You know, but I think the one thing which is really completely compelling is if for whatever reason one, you know, is not able to, you know, be Mekayim Kibud Av V'Eim, I think that's a very profound, I think that's a very profound counter pressure. I mean, you know, the Mabit obviously didn't think so. But I think that's something very profound, and it's at least something to think about, and I wanted to finish the discussion there, because I think that ultimately what it points to is that sometimes life just gets so complicated that, you know, for all of the amazing power of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, all the reasons that we spoke about it, sometimes, you know, our responsibilities as family people can trump even the most significant general values, and well, it's something to think about. Everybody sort of has to make their own calculation, but you know, one never wants, just to go back to the Rashi and with this to conclude, one never wants one's you know, let's say more ambitious spiritual pursuits, you know, the idea of cleaving to God in the land of Israel to come at the expense of basic human concerns, like taking care of one's parents who are in a position where they really need that help. And that, I think, is something that at least is worth bearing in mind as we all ponder for ourselves this question. Okay, so we'll hold it up there. Just wanted to